Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to another Talking Rugby Union podcast. I'm joined as ever by Chris Heal. My name's Joe Harvey, and I'm going to be kind of directing mine and Chris's conversation today because it's been a while again, so we could go on for a little longer than usual.
Yeah, it's been a while, and as ever with this 12 months of rugby union that we have had, there are talking points and talking points and talking points, Joe. So we'll try our best to get through them all in this, however long, this 45, 50-minute period we have now. But yeah, it's been an unbelievable year. I think every single podcast we do, Joe, we're talking about something controversial or a major talking point actually away from the 80 minutes of rugby that's on the field. So yeah, we'll get through everything and look ahead to hopefully an exciting weekend that is just purely about the rugby and nothing more.
Yeah, so we might as well start with the most recent kind of, what's called, it's stirred a lot of things, hasn't it? People have got the pitchforks out in the last few days. Mm. So we're going to talk about, so obviously it was the last round of Premiership fixtures on Sunday, or at least it was supposed to be all the games at the same time, so no one had an advantage in that sense. And that was what it was meant to be. Sale Sharks game against Worcester Warriors was postponed because of, I believe, 19 positive tests for COVID-19 in the Sale Sharks building. As a result, for some reason, PRL said, instead of postponing the game, that their game against Worcester Warriors would be moved to Wednesday, subject to further testing, which took place on Tuesday. That basically, that came back. There was 7 positive tests, but then someone else, there's other people that are saying 8 because there was a damage test, as I understand. So they're not actually able to fully determine what was the case there. So, Chris, we started hearing about this, I think it was like last Thursday night. That's when we first kind of got an idea on socials about this happening. What was your thinking when PRL essentially said they were going to postpone the game instead of call it off?
Yeah, it was, yeah, I think Thursday night, Friday morning, and all the kind of work we'd done, Joe, leading up to the playoffs was kind of in limbo. I think it was, again, decent work from the guys at the Daily Mail, Nick Simon, Chris Foy, etc., coming up and releasing this news originally saying that Sale were going to... there was positive tests in the Sale camp, and I think the postponement actually came listening to Steve Diamond on Sunday evening on BT Sport. It was obviously PRL's decision, but it was also from the Guidance of Public Health England as well, that they said, you know, right, okay, let's see what happens on Monday or Tuesday when they, I think it was Tuesday, wasn't it, when they were tested again. And if you do get a positive case, Sale had to agree to postpone the fixture. And obviously, as the days went on, it was kind of quite a weird Saturday lunchtime, actually, because all the teams were coming out. We were waiting and waiting. And then Worcester's came out. So we were like, well, where's Sale's team? And then Sale then released a statement. And it was like the communication behind it was atrocious from a journalist's point of view, because one Sale was saying one thing, another club was saying another thing, PRL was saying another thing. And it was just a complete mess on Saturday, Sunday, leading into Monday. Both teams then announced the squads on Tuesday for the game,
yep,
on Wednesday night. So everyone had their fingers crossed. Sale said they were getting tests done on Tuesday and we'd find out the results in the early hours of Wednesday morning. And as we feared, potentially yesterday morning, coming through on Twitter for our esteemed colleagues in the world of media, Joe, that this that Sale had unfortunately had more positive cases, which you just alluded to there, and they were in no position to carry on the game. And unfortunately for them, after such a brilliant season, winning the Premiership Cup and getting into, well, potentially getting into that top four for the first time in since they won the Premiership, it's ended in on quite a difficult note for them. But they will know it's the right decision. But it's caused a whole lot of chaos from 7 days ago when we're all gearing up for the big weekend of Super Sunday.
Yeah, and it's been one of those weird ones because there's been reports. I mean, the thing is, what we should always say is with reports, they have to be corroborated and understood. But as a journalist, like if someone gives you a report saying, for example, what was the case with the, I think it was the Telegraph or the Times that came out with this piece. I think you know which one I'm talking about, where there was the accusation, well, not the accusation, but it was alluded to that players, after their Premiership Rugby Cup victory, went out for a few beverages. This is probably the most delicate way of saying it. And essentially, people are linking that potential of them going out as the reason they've had a complete outbreak. Now, that has been refuted 3 times now. I think it's been 3 times now, directly by people involved with Sale Sharks, as well as the club itself releasing a statement. It's not been the prettiest kind of spell in rugby union history, in the Premiership in particular. It's difficult. Do you think people have lost faith with South Sharks, or do you think it's just a case of people trying to pin something somewhere?
I don't think people have lost faith in South Sharks. I think if you are to believe, I mean, the club have been absolutely adamant in terms of, they've, as you quite rightly say, Joe, they've completely refuted the claims that they that some of their players and staff went out and celebrated the Premiership Cup win at the University of Manchester. And at this stage, obviously, for reasons we can't say, well, actually, yes, they 100% did, or no, they 100% didn't, because we don't know the truth and we can't speculate on that. But listening to Steve Diamond on BT Sport, you know, he said they followed every single protocol possible. He didn't have the answer to that. He was asked the question whether he had the answer to where the source of the virus potentially came from. And I think people will question, you know, it's a situation. I was speaking to our colleague Max Ashcroft yesterday on the phone about it, and he said, you kind of look at some of the other situations that have happened in other sports. I mean, yes, there were photos taken of Tammy Abraham, Ben Chilwell and Jadon Sancho at a party where, because of lockdown rules in England, they weren't supposed to be there. No one has any evidence to suggest Sale were out or Sale weren't out after their Premiership Cup final win. So people still want answers, and that's the thing. There hasn't been any clarity. Sale have put their point in, but there is no clarity from PRL or anyone to say this is exactly what happened. And I think that's why, as you say there, Joe, that people may have lost faith in Sale, but I think people may have lost faith in the system behind the protocols, if that makes sense, because, you know, we're all still unknown to actually what potentially happened and why there was such an increase in positive cases within Sale. We know Manchester is, you know, one of the highest rates of infection at the moment, and that might explain it. As I said, we don't know. But I think there's a lot more questions than answers at the moment, which I think is where people are thinking they may have lost faith in, because it's been chaotic the way that it's been handled by, I think, the people away from Sale, I think, in Premiership Rugby. I think even yesterday they had to change a statement because they worded it wrong.
Right.
And, I mean, I've seen Johnny Fordham of The Sun's been tweeting a lot saying, the silence is deafening from kind of Darren Childs at the Premiership Rugby. And I don't think people have lost that faith in Sale. I think it's more sort of PRL and the way it's all been handled and been filtered through to the media and the fans, because in a way, the fans are the most important people, as well as obviously the people, like the players who've been and staff who've been unfortunately caught the virus. But there's been more questions than answers, I think, and the faith in the way PRL have done it, it hasn't particularly shone well on them.
No, not at all. And it's particularly odd because at the outset of the Premiership restart, it was said that there would be no postponements or reschedulings. There would just be cancellations. So that was kind of adding to it as well, because you were like, are Sale only getting given this opportunity because they have a chance of top four? And that was adding to it further. And it was kind of like, so obviously Sale played Northampton midweek of this week, and then it was on the Thursday and Friday when all these positive, you know, cases were kind of confirmed. Northampton Saints then had to forfeit their game against Gloucester, giving Gloucester 5 points, which, because essentially we already knew that they have a front row problem. They had a front row problem, and because of the nature of scrummaging, being, you know, close with people who may have let's be honest, Sale had a higher likelihood of having someone with COVID-19, given that we know how many positive cases there have now been. That's what I'm trying to say. And as a result, they've had to forfeit their game, which puts Gloucester 5 points ahead and reduces Worcester's opportunities of qualifying for the Champions Cup for the first time. So Worcester actually had to play this game.
Yeah.
To give themselves a good chance because of the points different aspect of it. And I think that's added to it as well, because Worcester probably now feel they've been a bit aggrieved by it because it's kind of been drawn out, and then ultimately for them not to get anything, and, you know, it's just been one of those things. It is, as you rightly say, it is a PRL problem as opposed to a South Sharks problem.
That's my view on it. Obviously, they might have a different opinion on it, but that's my view on it, Joe. That I think, you know, we're waiting to hear from the clubs, and we do actually hear from Sale first, and we do actually hear from Worcester first before anything comes out from PRL. And it seems to be very similar to what the clubs have said. And it's like there's no real leadership on it. And that's my personal opinion. It's like, you know, we do see with Premier League football and you know, the FA have been coming out with all these. I mean, I know it's not coronavirus related. Well, it kind of is coronavirus related, but the Foden and Greenwood situation when England were away in Iceland, there was quick action taken. The FA released a statement. Gareth Southgate said they're not going to be, you know, they're being sent home. This is the reason why no one's talking about that anymore. Everyone knows where they stand. PRL have not come out with a significant statement to explain exactly what's gone on, whereas we are literally hearing the side of the story from Sale and the side of the story from Worcester, but that's it. There is no leadership there, unfortunately for me, and that's the most frustrating thing about this, and I think that's why we find ourselves in the mess.
Yeah, no, most definitely, and I think we've seen recently as well, we'll talk about the women's game in a couple of minutes, but obviously we've seen that Racing 92, 2 weeks out from a Champions Cup final in Bristol, they've shut down their building because there were 9 positive cases, and I think that's added to it as well, because we've seen examples elsewhere where people have been quite definitive in their standings and how it's all going to be done. And I suppose, yeah, we'll mention the women's game briefly. That's going to be returning this weekend. Kind of come out of nowhere is that one.
Well, that's the thing, Joe. We're going to do a piece with Rachel Burford over the next couple of days, and she said she was exactly in the same boat as me and you. Mere mortals as me and you, Joe. She was saying, I didn't know, we didn't know when the fixture, we've been waiting for this day, and I think the media knew before we as players did. So I think, you know, that's come from nowhere for everyone, Joe. So yeah, that was interesting to hear.
No, but obviously England have got games in a couple of weeks, so maybe that's part of it. They want to get the England players out there, just see how it all goes. I'm presuming the England players, women's players, are all getting regular testing as well.
Yeah, so they're getting tested, I think, players going into international camps as well, who are involved in the Prem 15s are getting tested. But aside from that, the other players involved in the Prem 15s aren't getting tested. So it's just the international players.
Okay. So that's direct testing as a result of their rugby playing. If they're getting testing elsewhere, that is completely independent and that is their own kind of thing.
I think, well, definitely at Harlequins, and Rachel will mind me saying this, that the protocol that they have in place is if you have any kind of symptoms, or you develop symptoms when you are training or away from home, you have to go and get tested. And that is the protocol you have to follow. If you have any kind of symptoms, go and get tested, but you're not allowed to go to the club. Or if you are at the club, you will have to be sent home and be tested.
Okay, completely understandable. And what we've seen already is there's been a cancellation in one fixture, which is Wasps versus Bristol. That is one positive case in the Bristol Bears women's camp. That means the game's just called off, and I think that's kind of an interesting way of doing it. And I think I've seen Susie Appleby recently saying that she's quite shocked that players aren't getting more, you know, overall testing, such as in the men's game, where they're getting, I think, twice or three times a week, depending on what's going on in the week with the men. That will probably have reduced now that we're back to a weekend-by-weekend basis. But that is a presumption, but not to be, you know, not to be, that's not God's word. I think we'll say this first and foremost, we're very much looking forward to the return of the women's game. It's been a long time coming. Yeah. They've had the law variations in there that are there to reduce the amount of contact time between front rows and et cetera, such as, you know, if there's a knock on, it's an advantage now as opposed to an immediate scrum. Yeah. So that's going to be good. That's, you know, things like that are going to be good for the women's game. It's going to be good for the men's game, in particular the grassroots game, because that could have a knock on effect to what we potentially see in January, if that is when the community game comes back to us. So very much looking forward to seeing where those games are going to be broadcast. We don't have a clue at the minute. It's probably going to come out on Friday.
I think a few of them are going to be on England Rugby's channel. I'm not sure that's been confirmed yet.
So kind of how it was before.
Yeah. I think those games, I think it's the 4 games that are going ahead now because of that Bristol game being cancelled. But yeah, it's exciting, I think. You're absolutely right, Joe. I mean, Susie's come out and said about, you know, she's surprised that no one's getting testing, but there is the flip argument that, you know, these girls have wanted to, you know, they want to get out and play rugby again. For some of them, it's been since February, which is, you know, nearly eight months since they've played domestic rugby, and it's important for them to get back and running. They've been given the protocols, and with it being classed as an elite sport, they go through their protocols, and the law variations have been, you know, passed by the authorities to say this is how it's going to be done. It is interesting to see how they go, though, because, yes, we've had one positive test, as you say there, Joe, and it's not the ideal start, but if they are able... I know that they've got these laws, I think, for 8 or 9 rounds. And if they get through them with, you know, unscathed or, you know, with minimal cases, that is a huge positive for everyone in the game, as you say, Joe, because it could filter down to the community game. But I think the overriding thing is, yes, all the players aren't getting tested, but I can imagine that quite a lot of them are saying, well, these laws have been approved. Let's get on with it. Let's get back on doing what we love. So, yeah, it's exciting for the women's game. And as you quite rightly say, Joe, Six Nations around the corner as well for them and some autumn internationals as well.
Yeah, no, looking forward to hopefully being at England women versus France women at Twickenham. That should be quite a fun day. We'll just mention how things ended in the Premiership because we've got a weekend this weekend full of semi-finals. When I say full, we've got two semi-finals because there's four teams in semi-finals. So the way the table finished, it was Exeter top, Wasps in second after beating Exeter at the Ricoh Arena last weekend. Bristol finished third and Bath finished fourth. Now, Bath were the only real nervy side, I think, going into that possible Sale game because, you know, there was only 3 points between them. Sale could have leapfrogged them quite easily. It's an exciting top four, and we've now got two semi-finals in Exeter versus Bath and then Wasps versus Bristol that are really going to get the pulse going on a Saturday.
Yeah, you're right, Joe. I think it's been probably the strangest week for Bath or the strangest 2 weeks for Bath. Yeah. In their recent history, you know, rewind the clock all the way back to sort of beating Sale, it kind of looked from there that they put themselves in a really strong position going to the AJ Bell and getting the win. And I think, you know, because the squads were delayed until the Saturday, it was all eyes on that squad announcement anyway before all of what was going on with Sale. It was all about what team Exeter are going to pick against Wasps, what team Miss Harrison's going to pick against Bath. And lo and behold, Saracens played a pretty strong team. You know, barring obviously the absence of Owen Farrell and a couple of other key members as well. But that was the game that was, you know, I think it was on the main BT Sport channel for obvious reasons. It was always going to be tough for Bath to go down there. But after whatever it was, 60 minutes, they looked in complete control. They took the chances. Priestland good with the boot again. I think Ben O'Abaru and Ben Spencer against his old club as well going over, and it looked like it was going to be an afternoon where Bath were going to secure what just needed a win to get in that top four. But as Saracens have shown for time and time and again since their salary cap and saga in particular, the resilience was there, and regardless of them having absolutely zero to play for in terms of league position, they, you know, when they scored that equalising try and the conversion from Vunipola, you could see how much it meant to them. And I think that's obviously down to what you did, Joe, last week with Brad Barrett and Richard Wigglesworth also sort of calling time in the Saracens playing days for now. So, yeah, Bath would have been thinking, oh, my God, let's see what goes on with this Sale game. And it would have been probably, obviously, the situation is much greater than rugby in terms of player and staff's well-being, but there would have been a sigh of relief in the Hooper household, I reckon on Wednesday morning, Wednesday afternoon, when it was Sale's game was postponed and it meant Bath secure a top four spot. But yeah, you're right, Joe. It's exciting. I think Bath going to Exeter will be very, very interesting indeed because of the way Bath have been playing. But that Wasps-Bristol game is going to be a cracker. I know you were there for the league game, which was probably a bit of a bit of a letdown because of Bristol having to rotate and because of the Challenge Cup duties. But if you, I know you're hoping to be there on Saturday, Joe, and you are there, it should be an absolute classic because Wasps completely dispatched a third-choice Exeter side, as you would expect on Saturday.
Oh, yeah. Malachi Fekitoa has been brilliant. Like, that hit on Wyatt was just... That's just everything that, you know, you want to see, because the thing is, Wasps have done recently, they played a lot of pretty rugby because they've been coming up against oppositions so often that have been weakened. So it'll be good to see them properly like go into a full game because, you know, the first game I saw them, it was when they lost to South Sharks. And it wasn't particularly pretty. It wasn't much of a game, to be honest. But, looking forward to hopefully being there at the weekend. I'm going to say... the thing is, Bristol's a bit of a live wire one, isn't it?
You know, you talked about not playing pretty rugby there. And I tell you what Bristol didn't do last Sunday is play pretty rugby. Semi Radrada's try was brilliant from Piers O'Connor, and it was, you know, had the Bristol trademark all over it. But I think they scored three or four close range tries. A penalty try was in there as well. So they had to really dig deep to get the bonus point win against London Irish here. But these are two, as you say, Joe, these are two teams that can, you know, explode into life. So it's going to be a tough one to call. I mean, on our podcast we did when the season back in August when the season resumed, I said Bristol for the title, and I'm glad they're still in the mix. I don't think that now because of the way Exeter have played and the way Bath and Wasser are playing, but I'm glad to see Bristol still in there. But yeah, I think Wasser versus Bristol has all the makings of being a cracker.
I know. Looking forward to that. It'll be really good. Sarah Gerard versus Malachi Fekete, 13 game. Oh, no, it's going to be interesting. I'm going to say, I'm trying to work out a prediction for that one. I just can't figure it out. You know what, I'll just say, this is hurting me, this. I think I've got to say Wasps.
I'm going to say Wasps. I think it's shown. They're at home. I mean, Guy Thompson told us last week that they are, you know, being at home is a massive advantage for them. And he said when they got to the final, it was a massive advantage. Their home record that season was a massive thing for them as well. So, as much as, you know, Bristol play some fantastic rugby and they've been absolutely superb, I think it will be a home win there. And I think you'll probably agree, Joe, that maybe Exeter potentially to do a job on Bath.
Yeah, I think just because Bath were a bit nervy at the end of the season, I think that does count against you when you're trying to work it out. And it's just, I mean, the thing is with Bristol, they actually still have a chance of European, you know, they still have a chance of a European title the weekend after in Provence. And yeah, I think Exeter, you know, they've got such depth in that team that they could rest Joe Simmons for the, you know, for a weekend and then put him in for two finals in a row or something like that because Gareth Steenson still's got it. I'm going to go with the Wasps Exeter final at Twickenham on the 24th.
I think as much as this isn't, you know, great listening because we're both going to agree, I can't see past that. I think it'll take something special for someone to beat Exeter at Sandy Park. Their performance against Toulouse in the Champions Cup did it all for me. You know, they looked in the first half that Toulouse were getting on top, but Exeter clearly had a game plan and executed to perfection. And I guess they're going to be doing exactly the same. Well, would have done exactly the same this week. They would have been probably not sure which of those Bristol Bath sale they were going to play. But I think from Wednesday morning, Rob Baxter would have been absolutely focused on Bath. And it's going to be both very, very intriguing semi-finals and something definitely to look forward to.
Yeah, elsewhere in the world of rugby, we've had a 28-man squad named for a training camp taking place. Is it? No, it's not Penny Hill, is it? It's at the Lansbury.
Yes.
Yeah, it's at the Lansbury. Interesting.
I think the England football team are at Penny Hill.
Are they?
I think so. I think, unless I misheard Eddie Jones on Tuesday, I think they are at Penny Hill.
I know the women's team were at Penny Hill for a bit. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's interesting. That's an interesting turnaround. But yeah, 28. It was a 28-man squad. And it turned to 27 when Piers Francis tested positive for COVID-19 after that Sale Sharks game. So it's 27 men at the minute. They're disbanding as we speak. They're disbanding today. Tonight, and then there'll be another squad in the next couple of weeks, probably around the time of the final. That'll be when that's announced. 12 uncapped players in this: Ali Crossdale, Fraser Dingwall, Nathan Earle, Alex Mitchell, Ollie Thorley, Jack Clement. He's 19. Didn't realise that. That's a bit scary. Alex Donbrandt, Joe Hayes, Simon Kerrod, Lewis Ludlow, Alex Moon, and David Ribbons, the uncapped names in that. I was a bit surprised to see a couple of those.
Yeah, I think Eddie said there that he's only able to select sort of the players that aren't involved in this playoff race. We didn't know what was going to happen with Sale. And obviously, that has reduced his selection. So he's had to pick, you know, a lot of the players who have played for the clubs outside that top five. I think it was always going to be quite surprising to see some of those names in there. I think what is interesting is some of those younger guys that you may not have seen a lot of during this Prem restart. I know, yeah, okay, your likes of Alex Mitchell and Ollie Foley have been pretty much playing every single game or had a little bit of game time every time they played for Northampton and Gloucester respectively. But, you know, you like Sally Crosdale, what an opportunity that is for him to just go and experience the England setup for, you know, I know it's only 2 or 3 days, but, you know, to go in there and see what it's all about. It's good to see Don Brandt back in there again. Yeah. He's unfortunately coming to a time where in that back row, there are so many options. And I think last year, Don Brandt was one of the standout ones, and he has been this year, but unfortunately for him, there has been the emergence of even more potential English Black Rose. But it's interesting. I think you made a point before we pressed record, Joe. It's going to be interesting to see how many players put their hand up, is what Eddie Jones said on Tuesday, and take the opportunity to show what they can do over this 3-day period that may lead to them getting picked for that Barbars game. I think his next announcement is supposed to be the 19th of October.
Okay.
I think it's the Monday, isn't it, before the final. So he will know then, well, he'll know after this weekend who will be picked. So, you know, if Wasps get knocked out, you expect Jack Willis to be in there potentially. You'd hope so.
Even
anyway.
Then. Yeah, go on.
But it's interesting. I think this was kind of get everyone together, get things moving ahead of the Barbars game. And then obviously, I think on the 19th of October, we'll see a few more familiar names and maybe a more familiar squad, because Eddie has said he's not going to really change the way he selects players just because of the situation we find ourselves in now. I think he will continue to maybe pick the tried and trusted and maybe throw in a couple of names in there, maybe for the training experience, like we've seen with Josh Hodge in previous squads and players like that. So it was interesting what he said about Marcus Smith as well. Like, he kind of deflected the question. And it's just as Eddie does so well with his with cricketing love.
He's a keen cricketer, isn't he? You know.
Yeah. But I think he was asked a question and he said, "Well, we can only pick the players we select in the moment, but that doesn't mean we're not looking elsewhere." Which is a standard, you know, media trained answer. But it'd be interesting to see, you know, what happens on that 19th of October, whether your Marcus Smith might get a look in, or whether
Joe Simmons,
depending on what Exeter are doing. So, yeah, it was an interesting squad, but I don't think we can read too much into it at this early stage. But it'd be interesting to see, as you say, Joe, which players will be able to maintain that place going into that Barbars game on the 25th.
Yeah, that's going to be good. Barbars, Vern Carter's head coach, former international referee Glenn Jackson is the assistant coach. That came from relatively nowhere. And then Chris Robshaw was the only player as of right now who's been announced. I thought there might be one just after we finish recording. There might be another group of them announced, because it seems that the emails coming through at 11 with those announcements. So yeah, that's going to be good. And then we've got an Autumn Nations Cup, the conclusion of the Six Nations.
I was going to say, Joe, what obviously you've heard from Johnny May and Jamie George. Yep. This week, and do they have much to say on the kind of lead up to the Barbars game or anything like that?
No, no one's really talking about that game. I don't know. It's difficult to say, because I mean, it sounds horrible, because I mean, obviously, you know, I like the Barbars, I like the tradition of it. It's a bit of a nothing game.
Mm.
Like, no one gets a cap, for example. Like, yeah. It's kind of just one of those games. It's like, it's now a tester. It's a tester for people wanting to do international, because they're often coming up against guys who are international caliber. I don't think this Barbarians team is going to look like any Barbarians team I've seen recently, because they're not going to fly guys over from New Zealand. It's just not going to happen. We'll see some guys from Fiji, because obviously Vern Carter's Fiji head coach. He's going to be there for the Autumn Nations Cup. So we'll see some guys from Fiji. We'll see a lot of guys who've been just playing in the Premiership. I imagine John Afoa, provided that Bristol aren't in the Premiership final. I imagine John Afoa will be involved with it. But like I say, it's going to be a very different team. Like, Chris Robshaw being there is international quality. I doubt Brad Barrett will be, because he failed HIA protocols the other week. No one's really talking about that game. I think maybe for the younger lads, like your Alex Mitchells, your Alex Dombrants, maybe your Ali Crosdales, people like them, they might be a bit more keen. I think Ollie Thorley needs a run out at Twickenham. Because it's same with Nathan Earle, actually, because both of those two have been involved with plenty of England squads at this point.
Yeah.
They need that run out, and they need that run out in front of Eddie in an England shirt, whether it's England A, England XV, whatever, you know, whatever it is, they need that run out.
Yeah.
But it is, that's the thing. I think everything goes to the Autumn Nations Cup. We won't see, we'll see like two or three guys that are probably going to start for England a lot, but we won't see a lot in that game, not at all.
No.
And it would be also a good test of the guys with needing a bit of match fitness. I think Mark Wilson probably has a good chance of being involved.
Yes.
He hasn't played rugby for a long time. I'm surprised he actually never went out on loan anywhere during this period. I'm surprised Falcons didn't try and get some game time. But, you know, I've seen the pictures. The boys look fit. everyone looks really good, actually, considering they've just had to play a lot of fixtures.
Yeah, I think that's what will do them good in the lead-up to that Six Nations game against Italy, and then the Autumn Nations Cup is just this break for, you know, as you said, Joe, you will get a few of the lads who are in there right now, so your Johnny Mays, your Ben Youngses, your Jamie Georges, who will be involved most likely in October and then going into those Autumn Nations Cup. So, yeah, they're pretty sure they'll be pleased for the little break they've got now. Obviously, they would love to be competing in semi-finals of Europe and all sorts, and finals of Europe as well, and the Premiership. But I think in the back of their minds, they'll be pleased to sort of have this break, go into the England camp, another break, go into the England camp again, and then a busy autumn schedule will start for them.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, always around this time of year when you do get a squad, because the 28, this is obviously a 28, it's not a 31, it's not a 43 like we've had in the past. It's going to be interesting because we've not seen like guys like Dan Cole, he's not been selected. Could that be a break, or could that be, you know, something a bit more significant than that, that we're not, you know, maybe there's not been an official announcement. You know, and then obviously you see people like Joe Hayes, Simon Kerridge that come into the squad to train at Tighthead. Are those guys there because they're going to be getting international reps soon? Is it because Harry Williams still, you know, he's playing with Exeter and stuff like that? So much is so unknown at this stage. It's difficult to say what an England team will look like, because ultimately Eddie's mind is Eddie's mind.
Yeah, I think that's probably why he's experimenting now, Joe. It's a good point you make there, is that we don't know what's going to happen. Everything's unknown. So why not bring in, you know, a Simon Kerridge, a Joe Hayes, just to see how they are, you know, if they're up to coping with the demands of an England environment and coping with the training aspect of it, because that be given. This is, as much as we, you know, I mean, the last sort of 5 minutes we've been chatting about it, we're like, oh, it probably doesn't mean much, but for those guys, it will. I think it absolutely will mean a lot for them these three days. They will want to put their heart and soul into it, because they may not get another opportunity to get into an England camp because of all those players, you say, Joe, that will be coming back. So they'll be looking at the last sort of 72 hours. They would have wanted to make a great impression on the England coaches. So, as you say, Joe, it's we don't know what's going to happen, but it's a big chance for these guys in a weird sort of way.
Yeah, no, it's really odd. And it's things like, it is when little things in your head come around. It's like, for example, when you were just speaking then, I was thinking, oh, well, he selected scrum halves. He selected Ben Youngs, Willie Hines, and Alex Mitchell. You know, like, and your head just says to you, well, you know, Bristol are still in there. Harry Randall's got a great shout playing for England. And then just, it's little things like that. It's so difficult to say what an England team is these days.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you look at someone like Willie Hines, I think he's 34 now. The likelihood of him actually, you know, really doing too much. And then also Ben Spencer, you know, we've got all these things. We're talking about an England team, but it's not an England team, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
And I feel harsh saying it, but it's just the case. So what we should say is Chris has got a piece with Eddie Jones that's out on the website at the minute. I'm going to have pieces with John Mitchell, Johnny May. I've got the two Johns together. I just didn't even clock. John Mitchell, Johnny May, and then Jamie George on Sunday. Well, Saturday night, Sunday morning. That's going to be released. Johnny May, so it's Thursday on the day of recording. Johnny May and John Mitchell, that's going to be one piece. That's going to be out tonight / tomorrow morning. And then there's preview pieces of Wasps, Bristol and Bath.
Yeah, Bristol and Bath might be something we do together. We'll have to see. But yeah, we will be doing Bristol and Bath as well as you say, there, Wasps ahead of the weekend, Joe. And then all roads lead to Europe next week, which is why we've just kept our pals right on Exeter for this week. So all roads lead to Europe with next week as well. So busy time as always, Joe, with Premiership stuff. So yeah, looking forward to the content, and as I said before, Prem 15, I was going to call it by its former name. There, Rachel Burford will be on the website today, hopefully.
Okay. Yeah. No, I'm looking forward to my little break in December.
Yeah.
Feels like the first opportunity. I don't know about you.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a long slog, but we wouldn't have it any other way at the moment, Joe. I know we started the podcast by talking about Sale and a difficult situation around that, but you know, we've had a good chat. The bulk of it's been about the rugby that's been played, looking ahead to England, looking ahead to the Premier 15 starting. There's so much to look forward to over this autumn period, as there always is, but it just seems when you chuck in the Premiership coming back as well into that mix, there seems to be a whole lot of rugby going on. So yeah, it's exciting times. And yeah, we'll do our best on TRU to keep everything going and the website updated as best we can.
Yeah, and I suppose that's all that's left to say just before kind of I completely wrap it up. We obviously wish everyone at Surfshark speedy recovery from COVID-19. It's it's been a horrible time as these last few months, and you don't want anyone to be suffering with anything really. And it's just hope everyone recovers well. Myself and Chris have obviously been around that building quite a lot before COVID, so you know, we know a lot of people there. We've had a lot of chats with the canteen staff and all that kind of stuff. Well, that was at the old facility. It's moved now, hasn't it? But yeah, I don't know where to. So on the side of the city, isn't it? Yeah,
it's on the old Man City, old training ground.
But yeah, obviously we wish everyone the best there. You can follow Talking Rugby Union at Talk Rugby Union on Twitter, at Talking Rugby Union on Instagram. Just type in Talking Rugby Union to LinkedIn or Facebook. Will be the top result there. Chris is C_heel on Instagram and Twitter. I think I've overtaken you on Twitter followers, Chris. Little competition, might as well whack it in there.
I don't look at that, mate, to be honest. Don't look at that.
And then I'm JoeHarvey34, and I think everything apart from LinkedIn, but that's professional.
That shows that you look at my Twitter followers regularly, Joe.
Mate, every day, you've just got to make sure, just, you know, checking. I actually haven't looked.
That's an obsession, Joe.
It's a numbers game. No, thank you very much to everyone who's watched or listened to this podcast. I'm sure everyone's seen me get a bit more restless as things have gone on because I can't stay still for long because I'm a toddler. Thank you very much, and I'm sure you'll hear us next time.